And good morning. Welcome back. Continuing our 90th anniversary Lindbergh theme this morning with Eric Lindbergh, the grandson of Charles Lindbergh. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
You have a long and storied family history with aviation, obviously starting with your grandfather. But 1927 to 2017, that's 90 years. That's what does that that time span represent to you and your family?
Oh, you know, having this legacy is such an extraordinary gift. I think grandfather, I like to say before he flew across the Atlantic, people who flew in airplanes were called barnstormers and daredevils. And after he flew across the Atlantic, people were called pilots and passengers. And it's that shift in perspective of the world about what aviation could do. And we're living that dream today. Thanks to his flight and his
yes.
courage.
Exactly. And as we're focusing, focusing here this week on the flight itself, which was monumental. But it was actually the tour that happened after the flight that really lit the imagination of even more people who could see him in person and as he went out and promoted aviation.
Right. Oh, you know, I think when he did the 48-state tour in the spirit of St. Louis, something like a quarter of the population in the United States saw either grandfather or the spirit of St. Louis as he toured through all 48 states and then Central America also. And that really promoted aviation. That's what he wanted to do with the flight. He wanted to win a prize. That was the carrot. But what he really wanted to do was take his profession and show that it was real and it was usable for commercial purposes.
And you followed in his footsteps in 2002, recreating his flight.
Right. Right. So let me back up a little bit.
Okay.
In 1996, under the arch in St. Louis, we had the NASA administrator and 20 astronauts and a whole group of people, including myself, and we announced the XPRIZE Foundation, and it was based on the Ortig Prize, which grandfather went after, $10 million. We were going to put up a $10 million prize to the first privately funded manned suborbital spaceship. And it was totally crazy. And we didn't have the $10 million, but we wanted to jumpstart that industry. And then we had trouble. I mean, it took forever, and we couldn't raise the money. And in 2002, I decided I bet I could fly across the Atlantic like grandfather did and use it to raise money for XPRIZE. And I did it.
And from there, of course, a few years later, Spaceship One comes along. And they do their flight in 2003, the initial flight, and they actually go to space in 2004, a huge accomplishment for private citizens to actually fly into space. And, of course, a Burt Rutan design, which means it's totally unconventional.
Rock
just,
star.
That's right. It just fires people's imagination about what's possible. And now since then, you've continued your work with the XPRIZE Foundation, and it's not just focused on aviation or space travel, but you're really branching out into all different areas to try and really jumpstart innovation throughout the industry.
Oh, yeah. We realized that in pulling off the XPRIZE and in jumpstarting the private spaceflight industry, which we're starting to see really come
right.
to fruition now
yeah.
with SpaceX and Virgin Galactic and Blue Origin
yep.
right here, we realized that prize philanthropy could be used to solve all kinds of grand challenges that we see facing humanity. So we've got about $100 million in prizes that are active right now and another $100 million in the pipeline for adult literacy and poverty and energy and oil spill cleanup and all of these things that affect our quality of life. But, you know, the real gift of XPRIZE and doing that flight across the Atlantic, it was incredibly empowering as a small group of people to see that we got Spaceship One hanging in the Air and Space Museum in D.C. next to the Spirit of St. Louis.
Yes.
We changed the way the world thinks about spaceflight and really jump-started that industry. It empowered us all to go, oh, what next? And I'm not really a rocket scientist, right? I'm an aviator.
That's
so
right.
I'm like, okay, aviation. What are the problems facing aviation? Noise and fuel burn and all this stuff. I was a flight instructor for years. And I thought, I saw here at AirVenture my first electric aircraft about 9 years ago and thought, oh, if we could use these for trainers, they'd be cheaper, they'd be quieter, we'd keep our infrastructure because people get mad when we do too much training over their house. That could really help us thrive into the future. And that led me to start Powering Imagination and work with Embry-Riddle and now Vertigo Aero in the electric aircraft industry.
We're talking with Eric Lindbergh with the X-Prize, grandson of Charles Lindbergh, continuing your grandfather's passion. It just comes out. I enjoy talking to you every time I have an opportunity to do so. Now, you mentioned electric. So that is leading to the E-Spirit of St. Louis.
Right.
And it is here at Oshkosh.
We've got the E-Spirit of St. Louis here. We've been building down at Embry-Riddle for the last couple of years an electric prototype we call the E-Spirit of St. Louis. It's all electric, student-built, so the students have built that, and you can go see it over at the Gamma tent. Administrator Huerta, FAA administrator, sat in it yesterday and powered it up, and this thing is quiet, it's going to be efficient, and it's allowed us to build the battery packs and the controllers and really look at the, you know, how far are batteries going to take us? They're not ready for prime time, kind of like aviation was in 1927. But it's coming, and what it's enabled us to do is look at it and say, is this going to work? So now we're developing all the technology and putting it together and starting to build a personal air vehicle.
Excellent. Tell us a little bit about the E-Spirit. I mean, what size, wingspan, kind of?
We use batteries, again, don't have the energy density of gasoline, so we need to have a high aspect ratio wing, a glider-type wing. So we got a Diamond DA-36 from Lockheed Martin. Thank you very much. They donated an old test aircraft. We removed the engine and all the weird parts they had installed on it. And it was at Skunk Works, obviously.
Oh, okay.
And we replaced it with a Yasa motor, 100 horsepower. It's about equivalent. And we're building the battery packs now. You can see the actual battery packs that the students have devised with phase change material around the batteries. I mean, this is leading edge stuff we're coming up with. And we'll be testing that over the next couple of years as we develop the personal air vehicle, VTOL, vertical takeoff and landing aircraft that Uber wants.
That's right.
And doing that over the Grand Canyon, doing noise testing and optimizing propeller designs for the torque of an electric motor. So just fascinating, awesome work to be on that sort of cutting edge, bleeding edge, and it's not quite real yet. It's not quite ready. That makes it slightly crazy.
Yes. Even though it's not quite ready, now you've been dealing with the battery and electric issues for several years. How far has it come in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years? You know, a few years ago at AirVenture, we had a number of electric-powered aircraft, and you saw some of the limitations, but I would think technology is really starting to accelerate that.
It is. We're getting slow but steady improvements in batteries. But unless we have a breakthrough, some kind of, you know, unobtainium battery, it's not going to be commercially applicable for the next 7 years, 5 years, 10 years. We don't know exactly. So we're building this personal air vehicle as a hybrid.
Okay.
Hybrid electric, it's actually agnostic. We could use fuel cells or whatever the right propulsive prime mover is to power the buffer battery and the electrics that enable that distributed propulsion. That's the breakthrough from electric.
Okay.
How we get the energy to it is another question.
All right. And for you, what's aside from all of these exciting things, what else is on your radar?
Oh, you know, my passion is when I'm not trying to fly vertically or electrically, I make sculptures and furniture to kind of keep me grounded, keep me from blasting off into space, and I'm excited because I just got a commission for a 10-foot bronze rocket ship with chrome shoulders and kind of a Buck Rogers look to it. Right. So that's how I kind of burn off my excess energy.
Okay. Keep you grounded, as you say, but you're still flying as much as you can?
Yeah, not enough.
None of us ever can fly enough.
Anyone give me a ride out there?
Yeah, you probably find one out here somewhere.
All right.
Eric, any final thoughts, especially for any youngsters who might be listening, wondering, well, how am I ever going to get into aviation? Any words of advice for them?
Yeah, you know, I think there are so many opportunities for kids with Young Eagles, and we went to the Aero Innovate Pitch and Mingle, and they've got new businesses to get girls going and in aviation because we don't have enough women flying. anything you want to do, you can do it. You've got to show the motivation and the passion. Once you do that, you're covered, and we want you in aviation.
Very good. Eric Lindberg, thank you for spending time with us this morning. I know you have a busy schedule. Do you have any forums or appearances that you're making this week, or are you just enjoying the show?
I'll be giving a talk at the International Visitors Parade tomorrow at 12:15. Okay. And otherwise, I'm leaving on Friday.
Okay.
That's tomorrow.
That's
Friday.
Tomorrow, right.
It's been a long week already.
It's Oshkosh time.
I'm done, but I'll be over at the eSpirit at the Gamma Tent.
Sounds good. Eric Lindberg joining us this morning on From the Stand. I'm Steve Buss, and you're listening to EIA Radio.